My name is Andrew Stotz, and I'll be your host as we dive deeper into the teachings of Dr. W. Edwards Deming. Today, I'm continuing my discussions with Balaji Reddy, an educator and trainer in the teachings of Dr. Deming and quality management generally. The topic for today is connectedness, which will help you see things you normally would not see. Balaji, how are you?
I'm good. I'm fine.
Nice to connect with you.
Yes, same here.
Connectedness day.
Connectedness, absolutely. Yeah, we chose this term very carefully, right?
Because, I suspect you have, you know, yes, given your precision.
Yeah, the to see things that you normally would not see. This, let me attribute this to Henry Neve, who said that he heard Deming say this during his last 3 or 4 seminars in England, right? In Britain, rather. Yeah, I think it was mostly in England. And he said, when he heard him say that, he said, "I am not here to teach you anything new. I'm here to make you see things that you normally would not see." And I would like to just expand on that and say, when you see things differently, obviously, you know, you observe, you record different things. And when you record different things, you ask different questions. When you ask different questions, you get different answers. And when you get different answers, you draw different conclusions. When you draw different conclusions, you take different decisions. And when you take different decisions, you get different results. It's insanity to expect different results by asking the same questions every single time. So management is not so much about giving the right answers as much as it is about asking the correct questions. And I think Dr. Deming helps you do that. He helps you ask the correct questions. Now, coming to the word connectedness, we spoke about the system of profound knowledge, a unified theory of leadership and management, where Dr. Deming brings together 4 sciences. And the first one, he says about systems thinking, or what he called as appreciation for a system, of appreciation for a fact that everything is systemic, there's nothing that happens in isolation, right? And the second one, of course, he said was understanding variation, then understanding theory of knowledge and understanding psychology. But it's, he said, you all 4 are equally important, etc. And then comes the I won't say contradictory, but chapter before profound knowledge on systems especially. So that's where I decided to use the word connectedness, that all these are connected. And what did he mean by that? So I believe he wanted people to learn about connectedness and systems first. So let's dive right there. What did he always say about systems? So or connectedness, as we say here, and let's get into his definition for system. And he says that a system is a network, right, of interdependent components that work together to achieve the aim of the system. And then he says, every system must have an aim. Without an aim, there is no system. And very well articulated throughout this book, which he wrote, he always began with aim of the chapter. Even in Out of the Crisis, he always started with aim of a chapter. So network of interdependent components. So let's just break it down, because the 3 important words are network, interdependent, and aim. And he says aim comes first, because without the aim, there is no system, right? And he goes on to tell us what the aim of a system should be, right? He says here that the recommended aim should be for everybody to gain. Now, in one of the paragraphs there, management's job, where he says should be to make it clear, the first step is clarification. Everyone in the organization must understand the aim and how to direct the efforts towards the aim, right? And everyone must understand, okay, this is important. The danger and loss of the whole organization from a team that seeks to become a selfish, independent profit center. Right? So he says here we need to give both. Why we need to do what we need to do. And he says the aim precedes the system. Now, I would like to leave this discussion right here. We will cover this in our 14 points, our session in the 14 points, because I believe the word aim and purpose they go hand in hand. Aim gives us a direction, and purpose gives us the reason why we exist, right? And so the direction of all the efforts, you can see the development. He says here, he gives some examples that the system must create something of value, in other words, results, the intended results, along with consideration of recipients and of cost, mold the aim of the system. So he said it should be something that makes life better for everyone. Now, he was talking about a man-made system here. Remember, he wrote this for organizations, but I think I mentioned this before, that this can equally be applied to natural systems if you want to really study them in detail. I remember talking to Barbara Lawton about this, and I said, natural systems, they do have an aim, it's just that we've not understood it, all right? The purpose and aim in fact, that was the basis for my paper, which I delivered at the Deming Research Seminar in 2002, right? The title of my paper was Deming and Ecology. And I was trying to put together the thoughts of the physicist Fritjof Capra, who wrote some wonderful books like The Tao of Physics, The Turning Point, The Web of Life and the Hidden Connections. So, and The System's View of Life is also one of the sub books or booklets that he came out with. But these were his wonderful books. At the time, he had not yet written The Hidden Connections, right? So based on his three books that I had read up until then, of course, one was called Uncommon Wisdom, where he reproduced some of the interviews he had with some systems thinkers in the world, including people not from conventional systems thinking. For example, he also reproduced his interaction with the then Prime Minister or the ex-Prime Minister of India, Mrs. Indira Gandhi, and how he spent time with her, because he was over here in India for quite some time studying the language Sanskrit and studying the texts over here, because he learned about systems thinking went deeper. So over there, he wanted to, he raised a question, that what is the purpose? So I wanted to use Dr. Deming's theories to understand the purpose of the natural system and what is the purpose of man in this natural system. So that was my theory. And that's when this aim thing became more and more clear. And Barbara said, no, you're right. There is an aim. It's just that, we're trying to understand it. Without that, you won't have the system working so beautifully. There is something that is at work, right? And he says your management of a system. And then he says a system includes the future. And now here's where you talk about system includes the future. He mentions Peter Senge in his book, the if you know about the fifth discipline, the art and practice of a learning organization. And that's where this fantastic statement comes in, because he says delayed effects. So although Deming never used these words directly, but here I am putting among the first principles of systems thinking, is that cause and effect are not closely related in time or space, right? And that gives a lot of frightening conclusions, or inferences that you can draw from this. If I say that, by the way, that cause and effect are not closely related in time or space, and if I ask you what you understand by the statement, your first knee-jerk reaction would be, what I do today, the consequences would be felt in another time at another place. Absolutely right. That's exactly what this means. But the converse is also true. What we get to see in front of our eyes, the origins are at another time and another place. So we only see the event, but systems thinking teaches us there are no events in this world. There are only eventualities. Now, this comes into play when you start doing a study, typically when people learn about quality. And then the first thing they learn is to, okay, identify a problem and try to solve it, right? And then they start asking the question, why did this happen? And then you draw a fish bone diagram, which is, one of the most popular tools. But the problem there is you need to arrange the causes logically and not categorically. And you also need to take into account that these causes are also related to each other. You can't isolate them. And the fact that there could be an element of time over here, right? That there's a delayed effect that you're seeing. So the effect comes much later. And sometimes it could be weeks and months. So you have to take that into account, right? So the cause and effect are not true, which means then the next corollary from the statement is that seemingly disconnected events turn out to be connected. And so when you are studying something that's happening in front of your eyes, very quickly you ask the question, what else happened a month ago, a week ago, that we seem to have missed? Are we missing something here? So that's one of those things that we need to get into, right? We need to go backwards in time and not look at the localized stuff here. We need to look in space all around and try to figure out where and how we need to change things,
And
right?
it's also interesting to think about all the things that have to have happened for an outcome to occur today the way you want it, you know, that is the right outcome. And, you know,
Yes.
like I, a good example I use for that, and I was just talking two different times this week with my team, is coffee. Coffee is a really interesting one because when you go to a coffee shop, they make you a cup of coffee, they give you a cup of coffee. But what you don't realize is that there was a farmer, took him 5 years to grow that tree. And then they had to pick it at the right time. You pick it at the wrong time, it goes wrong. They
Oh,
put it
yeah.
in, they put it into a, you know, into some water. They leave it in too long, it's fermented. They leave it in too short, it doesn't, you know, the shell doesn't come off. And then if they once they've you know worked on it, if they have their kind of grinders that are getting off the mucilage off of it, if they're too tight, well, then you're going to get a little slice off the top of the bean, and then when that goes to the roasting machine, that's going to burn right there because there's no protection in that area. But they got to get all of those things right all the way to that barista, and if that barista just basically doesn't check the water temperature, it's done. You
It's
throw it away.
done. Yeah.
And when you think about it, I have another lesson that I give to young people about capitalism, that how all of these decisions are happening all along the way. And when that happens, there's waste in the system. And that waste goes back all the way back to the effort of the farmer 5 years ago when they planted that tree.
That's right.
And so reducing waste is not only good for you and good for costs in general, but it has like a respect for the process, a respect for the
That's right.
system.
Yes, connectedness. Reconnected.
Well, another thing I tell them, as I say, and here you have a coffee bean coming from this country that's then being shipped to this country. They never met. And
Yeah.
that's capitalism. Like you trade. In fact, they may not speak the same language, or
Absolutely.
they may even be enemies. They may hate each other.
Yeah.
And yet they trade.
Yeah.
And so it's like it's a voluntary connectedness that happens through capitalism. Anyways.
Yeah, the right quality and uniformity at foundations for commerce, prosperity, and peace. That's Deming for you. I think he chose that sentence so beautifully, which it goes into the Deming Medal. He knew what he was talking about. So he was talking about systems, and I think profound knowledge came towards the end of his life, and rightly so. It came as a revelation, as a catharsis. I think and he went through all of that, especially I think it was between 88 and 89, if I'm not mistaken. Jackie Graham talks about this very, very funnily. She says that they were giving him pure oxygen, and maybe that made his brain cells go alive. And he could think so clearly. He was getting pure oxygen, and
But
his thought process was.
by the way, for the listeners out there, you may feel like I feel when I think about how Dr. Deming didn't really come out with a system of profound knowledge till he was, you know, 90, late 90, you know,
89,
early
yeah.
90s, let's say 90s.
Yes.
You think to yourself, okay, I still have time to come up with my incredible insight on
Right.
bringing together all my experience.
Yeah. So because I think I shared this with you before, that when you read Mary Walton's book and he says, no, I don't think I'm ready to establish an institute, and he only did it 1 month before he passed. So I think by that time he was quite sure what he created was quite amazing and it'll stand the test of time, right? And although the title of the book is The New Economics for Industry, Government, Education, I believe it is Industry, Government, Education and Healthcare. Because when he was in Japan, he said Japan must see itself as a system. And when he got the Deming Medal, that's what he said. Oh, sorry, when he got the Emperor's Medal, the second order of the Sacred Treasure, and he was talking to the Japanese Prime Minister, and he said, you all must see yourselves as a system. And the four sectors of education, industry, government, education, and healthcare must work together. So he meant it as in the broadest sense of the term, right? And that's why this word system. So the first thing, of course, cause and effect are not closely related, seemingly disconnected events that are not really connected. The third important thing here in systems thinking is the reductionist thinking that we have. We believe the word analysis means dissection. And if you look deeply and read the book Mind and the World Order, what is the purpose of analysis? The purpose of analysis is not dissection. That's just the act of breaking a system down. But the purpose of analysis, interrelationships, establishing the interrelationships or understanding the connectedness. And I find it quite funny because people say analysis is dissection. And so they came out with a new term, really not necessary. Synthesis, bringing it all together. There was no need for that term. You're not engaging in what? Tautology? You didn't need that. Analysis itself means dissecting and understanding relationships, right? And so he said here, we have that reductionist thinking, but we forget that in a system, you have what are called as synergistic relationships. You cannot understand a system by breaking it down into its components and studying the components separately, and then believing that the components and their attributes and what they do gives the output of what we see. No, you could be completely wrong here. It's more not what they do separately. Okay, it's a good thing to understand the components of a system and study them and maybe even establish connectedness, but sometimes what the results you see are quite contrary to what they could be giving separately. I'll give you an example here. Take the case of water. Water is composed of hydrogen and oxygen. You cannot study and draw conclusions about water by studying the attributes of hydrogen and oxygen separately. You'd be making a mistake, a grave error. Okay, let's do that. Hydrogen, a highly inflammable gas, catches fire like this. Oxygen feeds fire, but you put them together and they give you something that quenches fire. Hydrogen is not wet, oxygen is not wet, but water is wet. How do you explain this? All right. If you take the case of sugar, it's a hydrocarbon. Try tasting hydrogen. All right. Try tasting carbon. Now put them together and see what you get. Now, can it not be then that you are studying a system, and when you break things down and you're studying the components separately, you could be making the same error? It's not what they do separately, it's what they do together. It's the same with sections in a company, departments in a company, companies themselves. Today, we use this sophisticated term, supply chain, call it what you will. I love to use the word provider network. I don't like using the word supplier any longer. I like to use the word provider because today, we are living in a different world. We are getting activities done by someone else. And you can't say he's supplying me this activity, he's providing me this service, right? So, provider is a better term to use than supplier. And it's no longer a chain, it's a network, right? It's more lateral, it's all over the place. It's not linear. You're doing a huge disservice by using the term supply chain because it's not bringing out what exactly is happening right there. And today's supply chains or provider networks are globally dispersed. So you need to have something that connects. You just said that the farmer could be in a different country, speaking a different language, maybe didn't even know where it is being used, and they could hate each other, but they have to work. You need to work together. So there's some kind of connectedness that comes in once again. But here's where people make mistakes. So you're talking about synergistic relationships. So sometimes in a team, now here's where all that incentive pay and choosing employee of the month can destroy a system. It could have been the entire team that did well, and they did well because they worked as a team. And it was synergistic, where some components had to, I can't use the right word, but maybe had to underperform so that the system came out ahead. It's like the organs of the human body, right? That's an interconnected, interdependent system. You have a primary function of each of the organs, but there are many other functions we are still discovering. For example, if you take the case of ears, besides hearing, they're responsible for balance in a body, right? Eyes, besides sight, they are also responsible for balance in a body. If you try this yoga position, you know, there's a yoga sort of say, yeah, you stand on one leg and then you lift one leg off the ground and put the ball of your heel on the knee, the other leg's knee. And then you hold your hands above your head to form a like a namaste or a triangle. As long as your eyes are open, you stand upright. Shut your eyes, you fall. It's a system, and we don't even realize it, right? So this is
You
some
also
things we are
fall
still.
in that posture when
Yes.
your teacher says, as mine did once, now you're in the position, now raise your other leg. My yoga teacher didn't come yesterday, but you know, I did my sessions every day.
That
But I haven't been
was a
able to do
joke.
that one yet.
We had that joke in school. Why does the crane stand on one leg? Because if it raises the other leg, it will fall. So
Yeah.
it continues standing on one leg. So, yes. So you have the synergistic relationships which exist, all right? And it's so difficult then to establish these the interrelationships, and sometimes they're visible, sometimes they're not, right? And sometimes you get to see the results right up front, sometimes you get to see them in time delay, and that is why Deming said continual improvement. It never stops. Continual learning. You can never say you have complete knowledge of a process or a system. You can never say that, right? And now comes the best part when you say here that all these are interconnected and there's synergy and then there's cause and effect, not closely related in time and space. The output of a system, that is why, is subject to variation. And that's why the study of variation becomes important, right? And when you draw a diagram saying, suppose you say this is a system and all the components are there and you draw the interconnectedness and you draw an arrow and you say, okay, you're getting the system is subject to variation, right? Can you with absolute certainty say that because the funny thing is each of the components performance is also subject to variation, right? So can you say that this combination gave me this output? You can never say that. You can only say it's probable, might be somewhere here. And so I think Baudrillard's heart's greatness was in recognizing that what is natural to a system and what is not natural. When do you start asking the question, what do I know about this? When you cannot predict, when you can predict with a certain amount of certainty, right? That this is going to happen. It is between these two limits. Well, then that's when you say, okay, I think I know quite a bit about this, but I don't know much. I want to reduce those limits because I want to be as certain as possible when I make a prediction. And that was what was continual learning. It was not so much about cost. It was as much as it had to do about understanding and predicting. I know what's going to happen next. To a certain extent, this will happen. This will happen, right? And that's where the understanding of variation comes in. Okay. And then he brought in the third, that in variation, you saw that they were what he called as random variation and assignable variation, or what Deming had common and special cause variation. Common causes belong to the system, and special causes are alien to the system under study, right? And so said, it's easier to identify the special causes because they tell you something's not right. And so you can say, I know it happened. You can isolate and say, this is the cause, right? It makes it easier for you then to isolate that, study it. But,
I just had that happen this morning.
okay.
I'll give you an example.
Yeah, sure.
I've been working with my accounting team, and what we're trying to do is make sure we have on time and accurate monthly financial statements. And I've chosen those words very, very carefully. And what I've done with the team is ask them, there's no pressure in this. All I'm asking you to do is pick a day that you think we will be able to have on time and accurate monthly financial statements. And then they pick their days for each month to the end of the year, which pretty much certainty accounting is a repeating of a similar function.
Right.
And so then, as I was talking with them throughout that day, I said, why are these boxes piled up around here? And they said, well, the room that we store them in is getting full. The paper, because you have a regulation in Thailand, you have to have your accounting documents for up to, let's, 6 or 8 years on premises in case the revenue department comes. So I said, well, show me that room. And we went to the room, and it was an absolute mess. It's like people have been dumping boxes and papers in there for 5 years. And
Wow.
I said, okay, you got to clean up this room this month. They're like, ah, it's going to take us 2 months. I said, look, this is critical. And they agreed. And so they have now completed that task, but it consumes so much of their time to do that. And it looks beautiful now. But they're 2 days late on the on time and accurate monthly financials. And if we were to look at that on a control chart, we would see that it's a big deviation from what
Right.
they've been able to do. But that special cause is almost meaningless, just as meaningless as the random variation, in the sense
Right.
that this was just a simple situation where there was a trade-off. They made the trade-off, and it's an acceptable trade-off.
Yeah, I'd like to put it this way. When you know why it has happened, it's not that harmful, right? As long as you can predict when we do something. It's the unpredictability that makes a special cause harmful. And that's why when I use the term that Deming's thinking was about reducing or eliminating harmful variation, that is things which get out of your hand and you really don't know why it's happened. So once you get to know, I believe that this could be connected, yeah, that's a good place to start, right?
Now, someone that doesn't understand the situation and look back over time may not understand what that cause
Correct.
was, which I'm thinking that I want to develop kind of a note-taking system where we actually, write down what was that so that we have a record and an understanding of it.
Yeah, and so when you say here that it's that there's so many that the complete knowledge is not possible, and that's where you start thinking that was Deming being a pessimist to say complete knowledge is not possible. Unknown and unknowable. Well, no, he was just being realistic. But he did not leave us right there. He said, the way you can make the unknown as known as possible is through the theory of knowledge. And that's how the whole thing is. It's beautifully done, what the theory of knowledge is. But he says here very simply, one of those exercises which you see in the new edition of the New Economics on page 58. But if you go to the old edition, right, that's, I believe, on where would that be? Page 84. The example he gives there, effect, the plans and their effect, area A, B, and C, the matrix diagram, if you see that. that he says was devised by Henry. And then, of course, he picked on that and put it into his book. I got a chance to actually work on this in the form of a game. And the game, I would break up the audience into four or five groups of five people each, and then say your department A, department B, department C, and then have a host of projects lined up for them. And I say, now you're going to be ranked and rated based on how you do as a department. And so they would choose those projects where only they were benefiting, right? And obviously, that's what you see in the first table. A chooses three projects and B chooses two projects and C chooses three projects. And you see the plus signs there indicating that it's for them, right? For them alone. And then they are exposed to the fact that, wait a minute, now we're going to give you some extra information. You chose these projects because they were good for you, but now we're going to tell you that these were bad for the others, right? And only one of them was good. And I say, okay, now here's this extra information you've been given. Now what are you going to do? All right. And I said, I'm giving you 5 minutes to, because the company is going to do badly, right? And even though you get a good rating, but the company does badly, and eventually the company might have to shut down. So what would you want to do now? I'm giving you 5 minutes to rectify this. You know, Andrew, not even 5 minutes was necessary. They would come back within 2 or 3 minutes and say, let's just choose those projects where everyone gains. And I was surprised the first time that happened. And that's why Deming said cooperation is the key, and it is natural. It's just that we have brought in this competition thing. So competition is not natural. He says cooperation is natural.
And that, in Asia, and I can speak to Thailand, what I like to tell people here in Thailand, what for managers and people running business, is that the core strength of Thai people is that they want to work together. So when you break them up and you put them into groups and then you incentivize them either by group or by individual, you destroy their one of their core strengths.
Right.
That's not a core strength of American. A lot of Americans don't want to work together. They just want to do their own thing, right? They've been trained to be independent and they don't want that hassle. But in Asia, particularly in Thailand, where we're struggling to bring more and more value, what's happened is the KPI mentality of divide and conquer really is damaging. And it brings me to another point or question that I wanted to mention, and that is about, the natural, my mom has a saying, and it's inch by inch, it's a cinch, yard by yard, it's hard. And what she was telling me was to break things down into manageable parts and then work on, the next right part, and then you will start to make progress. And we have studied under Adam Smith and the concept of how division of labor brings value, can increase output. And so there's a whole side of things, and then we're incentivized as individuals, particularly in the West, but let's say generally that, if it's to be, it's going to be up to you, and you got to make yourself performance and your department's performance. Well, I don't care about the others. I care about what you're doing with yours. So there's an accountability aspect, and it all comes together to give people the perception that, hey, I need to break this down into smaller parts. And so there's this natural inclination to do that. And you and if you were to say to people, you can't break it down into individual parts, that also doesn't work. You have to be able to understand the different parts and their interconnectedness, going back to what you're saying. But it's
Yes.
there's a lot of different things that I'm saying here, but I think the thing that I'm saying is that the pressure on most people is to divide and conquer, to say, I'm going to go and look at this department and you and your performance. How, and what Deming was saying was, you've got to look wider than that if you're really going to be successful. tell me where I'm right or wrong, or give me some guidance.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly how it is. And I just told you that when I saw this happen, it was like an eye opener. And then what happened after that was, okay, there were some other projects which were we were not going to do well, but the company is going to come out ahead. So why don't we choose those? And that's exactly what you see in the table, that they choose certain projects where they themselves are. That's real optimization, right? That's getting the best for everyone. Right. And today it's become an overused and abused term. For anything they use the word optimize, I think Deming was way very clear about this 30 years ago when he came up with this idea. And he said it's for everybody to gain. It's not compromise, it's optimize. Right. So I of course have a different take on optimize, and we'll see that next week when we come into four parts of profound knowledge. So I'd like to end here with talking about cooperation is the key, and I think we realized why. Deming says it's not about each other, it's win-win. The system should, and he gives that lovely example in the same chapter, the last example, where he talks about the truck company, the two truckers who used to keep their establishment open alternately overnight so that both could gain and they would use each other's resources. But he said, I was surprised when I called the pickup truck and I saw that the truck was from his competitor. He sent his competitor's truck to pick up my car, and that was a classic case of cooperation. So since he ends with that, he ends that chapter. I'd like to also speak about that. Cooperation is the key because we are dealing with something very complex, right? And none of us is as strong as all of us. And it's not just about, like you said, because cause and effect are not closely related, it is imperative that we need to work together. So that was with system thinking. Cause and effect are not closely related. There exist synergistic relationships. Seemingly disconnected events turn out to be connected. And outputs are the result of a myriad of inputs. You can never say you know everything. So that was systems thinking for you. They apply to the elements of profound knowledge as well. So
Great.
next week, we'll get into profound knowledge.
I think my ending thought on this goes back to the concept of meditation, the
Okay.
concept of insight meditation or vipassana or,
Vipassana.
yeah. So part of what I understand about meditation is the idea of clearing our mind in this moment.
Yes.
It may also be just observing our mind, and just observing all that's happening and going on, which is fine. And let's say that a meditation master may be able to clear their mind. But let's just say that what we're trying to do is come down to this instant, this moment. And I remember during COVID when a lot of pressures were on in my business and stuff, I used to meditate and focus on one saying, which is, I'm okay right now at this moment.
Right.
And why this is interesting is because let's say this moment is time zero. What you've just explained is that there's about 50 million things before time zero that have been
Yeah.
connected in one way or another that got you to time zero. And
Yes.
you also said that a system is, that Demi said is a system is includes the future.
Future.
And that's going to be a function of all the different things that happen after time zero, the interconnected things. And it just made me realize, so the value of meditation, I can see it even more now when I think about all the connections on both the future side and the past side. And so it just helped me, think about it from that perspective, a little bit different. But, anyways.
Yep.
So I just want to thank you, for taking the time. And in fact, what I was thinking is that I need to do more interviews with our, advisors and other board members of the Institute, including yourself, because they've all got a lot to say. And I've got some discussions going on with that right now. So I'm looking forward to that. And so I appreciate the discussion and the journey that you're taking us on. And just for the listeners out there, remember to go to Deming.org and jump into Deming Next to continue your journey.
Yes, and absolutely.
There's so much, you know, so much to learn and explore. So I'm going to wrap it up there. This is your host, Andrew Stotz, and I'll leave you with one of my favorite quotes from Dr. Deming, and that is, people are entitled, that includes you,
yes,
are entitled to joy in work.